Buckmaster. Not sure what happened to the CBS Network News. Missing in action. I can't recall that ever happening. Tom Fairbanks,
somebody forgot to throw a switch somewhere along the line.
Somebody forgot to throw the switch. Welcome to the Buckmaster Show. It is Thursday, October 20th, 2022. Tom, did you enjoy that piece of bread I brought
in? What kind of bread was that from Mona's?
That is what they call rustic bread from Mona's, and I brought a loaf in.
Like peasant bread?
Yeah, it's got, I don't know.
It was very, very nice, very tasty. You know what I like about when homemade bread or bakery bread?
Yeah.
They don't seem to put as much sugar in it as the store bought.
Sugar.
And I don't like the store bought bread because they put so much sugar in it.
Yeah, there's very little sugar in their breads. And we don't talk enough about the Mona's breads, but what say we pick it up in about 10 minutes when we do our Mona's commercial. We'll talk some more about their breads. But anyway, it is the Buckmaster Show. Hard to believe we'll be celebrating 12 full years, a dozen years on the radio at the end of this year, and that will push us 35 years on Tucson TV and radio. The Buckmaster Show broadcasting from the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. The radio station is 1030, Tucson's voice for trusted news talk. We have our worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com. We piggyback the live feed from kvoi.com. When we do our telephone interviews, the Buckmaster Show live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. The Buckmaster Show contributor on education is Dr. Robert Hendricks. Dr. Hendricks, Associate Professor Emeritus at the University of Arizona College of Education. He is the former head of the Department of Educational Policy Studies and Practice, the former superintendent of the Flowing Wells School District. Dr. Hendricks is also a former Arizona's top school superintendent of the year. He's the vice chair of the Interfaith Community Services, which is a Tucson-based organization comprised of over 120 faith communities dedicated to helping people in crisis by providing assistance with food, housing, employment, and health care. Bob, how are you?
I'm doing well, Bill, and yourself?
Doing well. Thank you for asking. You know, about the Interfaith group, 120 faith communities, I'll tell you, that's a pretty darn diverse community for a city like Tucson, Arizona.
Very diverse, and it's interesting to me, despite their particular religious belief system, when they all get together in a room, we're focused on one thing, and that is to help people.
And you've been feeding a lot of people.
We've been feeding a lot of people. In fact, I looked at the report yesterday. We're up about 50% from
really?
What we were last year in terms of individuals who are in need. Of course, food need is only one thing. There's many other financial complexities of a person's life as well. And, you know, with rent and utilities and cost of gas and food and all of those things, we try to do as much as we can comprehensively to help in every way possible. And food is just one measure of help. I mean, there's so many other things that we can do, but the goal is self-sufficiency, helping people get back on their feet so that they don't have to depend month to month on the circumstances that are that put them behind.
One more quick question about the food scarcity issue, which is a huge issue, and if you're up 50% from a pandemic year, that's a lot. That tells me we've still got really big problems.
We do, and we depend a lot on the generosity of individuals. Plus, many of the grocery stores in town are very generous in their day-old goods, particularly baked goods and things that that would tend to expire. And we pick those items up, as do other agencies across town. And that's very, very helpful to fill the coffers and have some things available to people that, you know, are in great need.
Where do you distribute your the food then?
We have four different locations, plus we have a new mobile food truck.
Really?
Which has been, and you can check that out on our website, our ICS website, but it goes to different locations across town, and all of them are drive-through locations, so you stay in your car, and you drive up, and it's bumper to bumper, and we hand you the food. And
there's no questions asked.
No questions asked. Yeah, no. We have produce giveaway days and all kinds of things. So,
I'm glad we had a chance to talk a little bit about it. And you do have that website, Interfaith Community Services, ICS.
ICS Tucson.
ICSTucson.org, is it?
Right.
Yeah.
.org. And there is a section of the website to volunteer and to contribute. And we have our Empty Bowls event coming up in the early part of the year, which is always a big hit. We work with pottery cooperatives, and everyone that comes gets a bowl.
They create beautiful bowls.
Everybody gets a bowl.
Yeah.
And everybody has soup that's contributed by a number of vendors, and it's very inexpensive. The tickets, I think, are $25.
Yeah.
And always a sellout, Bill.
Well, I'm glad you're doing that. And, you know, this broadcast right now, if it touches one person in need, that one person should go to the website, and then when they're on the website, is there a phone number that someone that has
there is,
and that could call?
Call, and there
you know, if we could help one person, it would be worth it to me. Today's
show
would be worth it.
We have volunteers manning the phones, and they'll walk you through, and if there's something we can't do, we know other agencies that can help.
All right. Well, I'm glad we were able to get that out here. That's really why I come in to do this show. Quite honestly, every day. There's a couple of reasons. First of all, I learn something or hope to learn something new every day, which I always do. And second of all, I want to help people and provide a public service. So that's what we do. Dustin Williams, the Pima County School Superintendent, was our guest at the top of the show yesterday. I was surprised, Bob Hendricks, about his concern. I mean, there's a level, different levels of concern. His is almost off the chart. He actually went so far, and Tom, I think I heard this right. He said that this empowerment scholarships could bankrupt the state of Arizona, and the amount of money he threw out there was it could cost the state $1 billion with a B, $1 billion.
We don't know, but I do. I am inclined to raise that same alarm because it really is, in some cases, a cash giveaway. I know there's some very responsible people who believe in vouchers for private school education and also for homeschooling. But I think there are also some folks out there that are maybe taking advantage of the system. And unfortunately, I think students lose in the end here. But from an economic standpoint, without very much accountability, the state is giving away a lot of money. And I cite, for example, the homeschooling movement. Again, there are some folks who take that particular role very, very seriously. But the idea that anyone who chooses to homeschool their children without any sense of accountability at all can do so and receive a credit of approximately $7,000 per child without any testing, without any requirements of attendance, actually no oversight whatsoever, Bill.
And that's what surprised. How did that get through the legislature without
I think it came
any
about
oversight.
As a whole package of people who were pushing it. What concerns me is that homeschoolers can go as many years as they want. The only time they'll ever be tested is if they go back to a public school, they have to re-enter with a test. And of course, if they're way behind academically, then there's another problem. But that problem comes back into the public school system. So, yeah, I am very concerned about that. And Justin Williams is absolutely right. There is no end to this this money flowing out. Now, initially, when the bill was passed, they gave a deadline for the applications, and apparently not enough applications came in, so they extended the deadline as well. But initially, 80% of the people who were claiming the money were people already in that system.
Oh,
so that's interesting. It's not new folks that are leaving the schools. It's the ones who are already out, and now they have a new claim for financial resources. But I don't know where this is going to go. We're obviously a leader in the country as a state in this open voucher system. In a state that really doesn't provide decent salaries for people who are in the public school system. So this is going to be less money in the coffers. I don't know where it's going to go, but I don't think it's going to end well.
All right, let's get into this, the new laws that were signed, well, the new law, new legislation that was signed into law, K through 12. There were dozens of laws that were proposed.
Absolutely.
I don't know how many, but it's safe to say dozens. And in the end, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 were signed into law, beginning with SB 1159, easing the requirements to increase new teachers into the pipeline. Do you think that it will do that?
Yeah, I took these bills and looked at them and kind of gave them a report card from my perspective as to, you know, which ones I think are good, which ones I think might be bad, and some that might be disastrous. And, you know, you're right, there are many, many bills that are introduced, and it's almost like, let's throw all these against the wall and see which ones stick.
Mm-hmm.
And these are the ones that stuck. And the first one, Senate Bill 1159, which actually increases the pipeline of teachers into the profession. We've talked before about the fact that this is a problem. We're not getting enough teachers. I actually give good marks to this particular bill. It was supported by Governor Ducey. It did get legislative approval. But it gives districts an opportunity to bring people into the system, people with college degrees, but they might not be certified degrees, but individuals can work in the classroom, and the districts can actually do the training. And I think that's a good plan.
All right.
Many districts have structures already for training, so this is a good way to bring new people who maybe wanted to teach but were limited by a degree that wouldn't allow them to go through, get certified, and get employed.
All right, we're going to take a break, but before we do, Doug Martin, the former owner of this radio station, now the owner of Good News Communications Public Relations, would like to talk with Dr. Hendricks. Dr. Hendricks, slip on your headset there. Doug, we're up against the break, but I think you probably want to talk about the empowerment scholarships. Go ahead, Doug.
Yes, just a quick comment and a question. I understand the concerns about, you know, the accountability with homeschoolers and all that, but I would submit that people that are in either homeschooling their kids or private schooling their kids have not received any benefit that they should be getting from the state, from our tax dollars for education. So as far as the numbers, I'm not sure what they'll really come down as. But Dr. Hendricks, I know your work in the schools, and I know what you've done with your career. Do you believe that school competition is a good thing in terms of having more choices than just traditional public schools?
I actually do, Doug. I think competition is good, but I also like to think that competition ought to have a level playing field. And so if we have a situation where other institutions, and I'm not talking about charters because charters really are part of the same public school system. But private schools and homeschooling movements, I think, really ought to have the same kinds of assessments so that the state can monitor the progress of those youngsters as well. Again, I think these are individual choices. I don't feel competitively threatened by those particular movements. I just want to feel that if we're going to spend that money, if we're going to distribute it, that there ought to be increased accountability or at least equal accountability for those institutions.
All right, Doug, thanks for the question. We'll take a break right here.
Thanks, Doug.
Mona's Danish Bakery. We love Mona's, home of the Danish Kringle. We don't talk enough about their wonderful European-style breads. I brought in a loaf of what they call their rustic bread here for the folks here at KVOI and Bustos Communications in Tucson to sample, and judging by the reaction, it was a big hit. People loved the bread. Mona is open right now for lunch. They're open at, for breakfast, 6:30 Tuesday through Saturday, 7 o'clock on Sunday. Their website, monasdanishbakery.com. Be right back. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops, craft beer, and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
Delivering a $2 billion voter-approved regional transportation plan involves complex policy, legal, and financial matters. The Regional Transportation Authority is open to answering any questions you have about delivery of the current RTA 20-year plan or about the development of a new regional transportation plan for the next 20 years. Contact the RTA at info@rtamobility.com.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rialto River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com. The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Welcome back. It's Buckmaster in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. Green Things, 3384 East River Road. Still doing the parking lot sale. It's been so successful. I guess now, what, into its third week. So check it out. Some great bargains. They're open daily, greenthingsaz.com, and their sister business is zocalovillage.com. Also, we get wonderful support from Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. I was talking yesterday about the perfect time of year to visit the land of enchantment. I would say it's right about now, mid-October. So fire up the car or the truck, take that three-hour drive over to Silver City, and what a beautiful weekend they have in store. Looks like around 70 degrees, mid-60s to 70, perfect time of year to do some hiking. SouthwestNewMexico.org, the great starting place, their website full of information. Dr. Robert Hendricks, our education contributor, with us in studio, and we've been talking, started talking about the new K through 12 laws that have now gone in effect that are a result of the state legislative session. How about HB 2707 requiring students to observe up to 2 minutes, Dr. Hendricks, of silence at the beginning of each school day? Teachers are required to tell parents that they should discuss how the silence should be used.
Yeah, this is a curious one. I mean, some of these enacted bills, you know, are in the details, and logistically how this is going to work is curious. But there's this notion that there should be this, as part of the routine at the beginning of the day, there should be this 1-2 minute moment of silence. The actual legislation says that teachers in no way are to direct students as to how they were to use that time. Huh. However, They do direct teachers to send something out to the parents and ask the parents to counsel with their children as to how they might want to use that time.
Huh.
So this, I assume, is going to be paired with the Pledge of Allegiance. I mean, that would seem logical to me, which is already on the books.
Uh-huh.
However, with the Pledge of Allegiance, it is not mandatory for students to participate. But it is an allocated time and an allocated activity. So Pledge of Allegiance may be followed by a moment of silence. It's, you know, I'm not against the idea.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as long as we don't have students, you know, playing on their devices during those 2 minutes.
As long as everybody, you know, they'd be standing presumably for the pledge, and then when the pledge concludes, just perhaps if they want to bow their heads and say a little prayer or just be quiet, meditate, whatever.
Whatever.
Right? Yeah.
Whatever. So I don't question the intent of this, but I do question logistically how it's going to work.
2632 is now law, House Bill 2632, requiring high school students, starting with the 2026 graduates, to answer correctly 70 of 100 civic questions from the exam given to immigrants seeking citizenship. That's interesting.
Is interesting. And, you know, when I saw the passage of this bill, I did a little investigation as to what is in the civic exam. And of course, it's all you can look at is a sample because there are rotating questions. But 70%, you know, of 100 questions. Here are some of the questions that I was able to come up with. Give a reason why colonists came to America.
Okay.
Name one U.S. territory.
Mm.
What happened to the Constitutional Convention? Name the two Arizona senators.
Huh.
What are the branches of the federal government? What is a filibuster? What's the longest river in the U.S.? Now, I think these are things that students should know.
Yeah.
Will it be just an exercise in memorizing the answers, or is it going to be more of a comprehensive part of their education? I don't know, but it sounds like it's going to be a graduation requirement that students pass this. It's one of many graduation requirements that have come and gone over the years. So, I think the intent of this is good. I would challenge our legislators to take the same test.
Yeah. I wonder how they do.
How they would do. I would challenge our general citizenry to do the same thing.
Yep.
You know, if individuals are going to be naturalized citizens, if they need to pass it, we should know this information. And I'm suggesting that maybe we don't always.
Let's see if I can get through some of these others.
Okay.
HB 2438 has to do with library books and the material in the library. What's that about?
Well, this requires that library collections be available for parents to look at. I honestly don't know if that's a case where it's a problem. Parents should be able to look at the library collection if they want.
And this will all be online, presumably, about
right.
all
but
the
But where it goes
library.
Further is that it suggests that parents ought to be able to see a reported list of any materials that their child has borrowed from the library.
Huh.
Now, that's a further step,
yeah.
you know, in the regulation. And then also, as libraries acquire new book collections, that needs to be posted online. And I think the undercurrent of this is that there's some people concerned that maybe there are, quote, inappropriate, unquote, materials in the library. And they want to see what those materials are. They want to see what their own youngster is checking out. And this ties with another House bill of 2495, which is essentially says that schools cannot have any books to offer to students that have any reference to sex.
Okay.
And so that's kind of a gray area because it exempts what they say classical literature and early American literature. And one critic said, well, it probably is going to exempt the Bible as well because, you know, we all know that there are issues in all of these books that might possibly be questionable to somebody. But it's going to be the problem with all this is they're leaving the district responsibility for interpreting what's appropriate and what's inappropriate until it's challenged.
HB 2026 requires third graders in part to take an English assessment test each year to determine their state learning progress. We're quickly running out of time.
This is a benchmark test. Yeah. I don't think that assessment tests are a problem. Third grade is a good benchmark year to look at how students are doing, and it's now in the law that an assessment will be taken. But notice this is not a reading test. This is an English test to determine the English proficiency of the students that are in our schools. So it's a little different than reading competency, which we already have as an assessment. So this is an additional assessment that that determines language proficiency.
All right, I think we're out of time here. There is one that about COVID vaccinations, a misdemeanor for any government entity to require a COVID shot without parental consent.
Yeah, I think this is, you know, part of the backlash of the whole COVID requirement. And, you know, it just puts into law the fact that schools don't have the authority, you know, to exclude students who don't have a vaccination. And so that's something that, you know, it's going to have to be worked out. But that's the new law. So all these have gone into effect except for the book one, which will go into effect on January 1st.
Thank you very much, Bob Hendricks.
You're most welcome, Bill.
Okay.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana. Plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC, so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Have you always wanted to cruise to Alaska? If that's the case, then you'll only see the tip of the iceberg. At Bon Voyage Travel, we can package the full Alaska experience with a cruise tour. Journey to Denali National Park on glass-domed rail cars. Tour the tundra wilderness and see the northern lights with an expert guide. And of course, relax on your cruise as you enjoy the glaciers up close and personal. Go to bvtravel.com today. Bon Voyage Travel, your Alaska experts.
The way we vote in Pima County is changing. Are you ready? The League of Women Voters of Greater Tucson invites you to visit ReadySetVoteTucson.com to learn about new vote centers for easier in-person voting, new voting districts, and changes to the early voting list. Get ready to vote at ReadySetVoteTucson.com. Brought to you by the League of Women Voters of Greater Tucson. That's ReadySetVoteTucson.com. Get ready to vote.
Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
It's time for the CEO interview series on The Buckmaster Show, presented by Sun Corridor, Inc., a transformative economic development organization representing one of the most dynamic and growing major business centers in North America. Sun Corridor, Inc. is a CEO-driven regional alliance whose members aggressively champion mega-regional issues that impact economic competitiveness and quality of life. The organization has helped to drive significant business investment into the Tucson and Southern Arizona region through primary job creation, resulting in an economic impact of more than $30 billion, with 182 company locates and expansions supporting nearly 53,000 jobs. For more information, visit suncorridorinc.com.
And joining us on the live line, the new CEO of El Rio Healthcare and Sun Corridor, Inc. board member, Dr. Clint Kuntz. Dr. Kuntz is a behavioral health doctor. He spent almost a decade heading up MHC, Marana Healthcare. Dr. Kuntz, good to catch up with you again. Congratulations on your new position.
Well, thank you, Bill. I appreciate you having me on the show.
Let's talk a little bit about, why don't we begin with El Rio? It has very, very deep roots in this community. People know about it, but they may not be very familiar about all the services. What attracted you to El Rio, Dr. Kuntz?
Yeah, you're right. El Rio has been here a long time, but I'd lived in the Tucson area for about 9 years, as you mentioned, being CEO of MHC Healthcare. And over that time, I got the opportunity to work with El Rio on several different projects and really got to understand what they were doing in the community. And when the chance came up to join this organization, you know, it was one I just couldn't pass up. El Rio is so well known across Tucson, the state, and even nationally as a model providing really high quality healthcare. And I just wanted to be part of that.
Is this a good fit for your particular resume and your background, Dr. Kuntz?
Yeah, so I'm originally from southeastern Ohio in the Appalachian foothills. I had worked more in IT and manufacturing, and just by chance, I'd gotten the opportunity to work with and start a new community health center back in the Appalachian foothills back there. And that kind of led me through working as a COO at a health center and then becoming CEO of another New Start Health Center and starting another community health center there in Ohio. And about 9 years ago, I had the opportunity to take over CEO at Marana Health Center out here in the northwest part of Pima County. And that's kind of really led me to this role here at El Rio. So a little different background than everybody, a lot of people in healthcare, but I think it's really set me up well as the new CEO here at El Rio.
Dr. Kuntz, when I hear the words community health center, I think it's worth digging a little deeper into this. And you said you started a new community health center in your community in southeastern Ohio. What is the model for community health centers and maybe a little bit of a history about them?
Yeah, so the model of a community health center in El Rio is a community health center, has been since 1970, is that the biggest difference is that the El Rio is a nonprofit corporation controlled by our patients. So our board of directors are actually made up of 51% or more of El Rio patients. So basically what that means is patients control the delivery of care. We have a grant from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, which allows us to provide care to anyone who walks through our doors. We take most insurances and offer a sliding fee to people who, you know, are either uninsured or underinsured, those type of things. Our grants also help cover care to homeless, substance abuse. We have a lot of different programs in those areas. So we provide that all in a really integrated manner under one roof for our patients. So they don't have to go to another location to get their prescription and another location to see their therapist. It's all under one roof for them.
What is some of the history of the community health centers? Is this something that was an outgrowth of post-World War II, Dr. Kuntz? Do you know?
Yeah. So back in the early 1960s, I think it was right around 1964, Lyndon B. Johnson started his war on poverty. And part of that was the movement to start these community health centers. They started two of them, one in Boston and one in the Mississippi Delta area. And from that, the movement had just kind of taken off. And about the same time, there's a real movement here in Tucson to start to get more health care, to provide care to those who didn't have access to it. And it kind of aligned with the same time that the U.S. government started really pushing that community health center model through that War on Poverty program. All kind of the stars aligned. And in 1970, El Rio was awarded a grant to help pay for uninsured care and really helped them build their mission. And it really aligned with that national movement at the same time.
You know, you mentioned that this is an opportunity at El Rio to help provide care to everyone who needs it. That in itself, I think, is extremely commendable because one of the biggest complaints that people have is they just cannot get in to see a doctor. Or if they have a doctor that they've known for a long time, maybe the doctor's very busy and, you know, today they may call up and say, look, I've got a suspicious skin lesion. And then they're told, well, the earliest appointment is January or February. That causes a lot of concern.
Yeah, it really does. And that's a problem across our whole healthcare system. And I wish we had completely solved that here at El Rio, but we haven't, unfortunately. We currently have 13 locations serving all greater Tucson area. We currently provide care for about 130,000 active patients in the greater Tucson area. So we're providing care for a little more than 1 in 10 Tucsonians at this time. And we're providing nearly 500,000 annual visits. However, we still have a gap to fill there. We need more doctors. We need more support staff. We have patients who can't get in as fast as they'd like. Sometimes that wait can be, you know, longer than they would like or we would like as well. So there's still definitely a lot of unmet need out there.
So El Rio, beginning in 1970, just really a handful of patients in 1970, right?
Yeah, we started with about 10,000 patients in the beginning, one location, downtown Tucson area on the west side. And from that, we've grown and just kept growing. And today, we're right at 13 locations, and each of those locations are pretty large. Each of them serve more than the 10,000 that we originally served as a whole organization back in the beginning.
What about people that don't have insurance, Dr. Kuntz?
Yeah, we take anybody who walks through our door.
Really?
That means, Wow. Yeah, if you have insurance, you don't have insurance, you pay cash, whatever method you have, we will make sure that you get access to care. Our sliding fee scale is available to anyone who qualifies. There's some income guidelines and things around that, but we slide that your cost all the way down to what we just a nominal fee that our board of directors sets, and that covers your medical, behavioral health, dental care, pharmacy. All the services we offer are available on a sliding fee scale.
We're speaking with Dr. Clint Kuntz. Dr. Kuntz, the new CEO at El Rio Healthcare. And El Rio Health is a federally qualified health center, and they've been in Tucson since 1970. Well, let's talk a little bit about some of these differences. We've sort of touched on it a little bit between El Rio as a community health center and a profit and a nonprofit versus the for-profit medical institutions.
Yeah, and you nailed a big piece of it there. So we're, you know, as a federally qualified health center, that's really a payment designation. We call ourselves more of a community health center. But what that means is we're a nonprofit versus a for-profit entity. And that doesn't mean we don't try to, you know, make revenue where we can, because what we do is that we take any of our profits and reinvest this back into patient care. That doesn't go to a shareholder somewhere or outside the corporation. It goes right back into the corporation, to our employees, to patient care, those type of things. And our board of directors, who I mentioned, are made up of our patients, make those decisions of where those funds get reinvested in, and which is one of the reasons we've been able to continue to grow and provide more and more care to the community. And we really want to do that in that integrated model where we provide all these services under one roof for our patients. And that's really a big difference in your typical doctor's office.
Yeah, you know, I like this idea that you've got actual patients on the board of directors. In fact, 51% of your board are made up of patients. So when the board gets together, it must be very interesting, Dr. Kuntz, to hear what experiences the actual patients are conveying to you. I mean, this has got to be very helpful to you and the team.
Oh, absolutely. It's a huge help. And that was the original reason this model of healthcare, the community health center model, was set up this way, was to give a patient's voice into their own care and to give them the controlling voice, which is why it has to be at least 51% of the board of directors has to be patients. So you can have 100% if you like, but it has to be a majority of your board has to be patients. And they are very open about, you know, telling us what they like, they don't like, but they're also very, very knowledgeable, and they can tell us, you know, what they're seeing, their experiences of going through our systems, and really helps point out, you know, okay, this is an area we can improve. This is something we're doing well. And we get that feedback real time ongoing from our patients that way.
When we continue after the break with Dr. Clint Kuntz, we'll talk about, get into some of the services that El Rio Healthcare provides. This is our CEO interview series, our monthly series, sponsored by Sun Corridor, Inc. We'll have more with Dr. Kuntz right after our break.
Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley, proudly announces a second Tucson area location where you'll enjoy locally brewed craft beer and gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and now at the Doubletree Hotel on Alvernon across from Tucson's Reed Park. More on the web at noblehops.com. Delivering a $2 billion voter-approved regional transportation plan involves complex policy, legal, and financial matters. The Regional Transportation Authority is open to answering any questions you have about delivery of the current RTA 20-year plan or about the development of a new regional transportation plan for the next 20 years. Contact the RTA at info@rtamobility.com.
Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We are also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Welcome back. It's Bill Buckmaster. It is the Buckmaster Show. It is our monthly CEO interview series presented by our friends at Sun Corridor, Inc. And this month's CEO is the new CEO of El Rio Healthcare, Dr. Clint Kuntz, who's also on the Sun Corridor, Inc. Board of Directors. He spent nearly a decade heading up Marana Healthcare, known as MHC. Now he's over at El Rio. One of the nice things, going through all the services, Dr. Kuntz, that El Rio offers, is that you don't have to go to a bunch of different locations, which can be so frustrating to a patient. You know, well, this facility's there, and this one you drive about 5 miles to this one. You're trying to put everything under one roof.
Yeah, we really are. We want to make it convenient for our patients, you know, because that transportation, having to go to three different locations to do something that should be simple and registering five different times and giving all your information over and over can get really frustrating for patients. So one of the ways we try to make healthcare more accessible to everybody is make it convenient. And it also provides better care for our patients because then our team knows what's going on with the patient. You know, your behavioral health therapist, your dentist, your doctor, they all use the same record. They all talk to each other. They all are going to share that medication list. So you're going to get good quality, safe care that way.
I'd like to spend a moment or two talking about what healthcare services are in the portfolio. Yep. Why don't you share with some of that?
Yes. So we have a really wide range of healthcare services, all ambulatory, which really means outpatient-based services. We don't really do a lot in the hospital. That's not our focus. Our focus is on the outpatient care. We do all primary care services. We also have all full range of dental services. We have in-house pharmacies. We do laboratory. We have our own radiology, which are, you know, x-rays and CT scan, MRI. We can work with all those different modalities and help you get those. We have OBGYN, midwifery, so we can help, you know, all through the birth to death with our patients. We have full behavioral health. We have specialty behavioral services. We do substance abuse treatment. We do MAT services, which are that medication treatment therapy to help people break their addictions. We have a wide range of specialty care that a lot of it we don't necessarily provide ourselves, but we work with specialists to come in or to work with our patients. And we have a health and wellness department that does exercise classes, including dietitians to help people with their diet and teach them to cook healthy. More recently, we've added physical therapy. So we have our own physical therapy department for our patients. And we also provide a lot of these services through telehealth services, which has become extremely popular during the pandemic.
Well, I know when I broke my arm up in Alaska in a remote location, Dr. Kuntz, in May of 2021, I had to utilize, and I'm thank the Lord there was telehealth available to go over all the x-rays with the specialists in Anchorage, Alaska, which was, you know, about 150 miles away. And telehealth has become huge, hasn't it?
Oh, yeah, really, really large. Right now, it's maybe about 20 to 25% of our visits are done through telehealth. And it's really, you know, up to the patient, what they would like. We want to see our patients where we can. And there's the times that we have to see our patient, put our hands on them, we like to say, you know, do a blood draw, do the x-rays, really work with the patient. But there's a lot of services we can deliver right to you in your home. You know, what's more convenient to you. You don't have to maybe take an afternoon off work to go see your doctor. You can step away for a half hour and do a quick telehealth appointment and get whatever you needed taken care of that quickly. So it's a big convenience factor for our patients, but it also, I think, is a good driver of quality when done the right way.
So where are your locations? Where's your main location?
Yeah, so our largest site that we have is located on Congress, right downtown on the west side of I-10. But we also have locations throughout all of the greater Tucson area, up from the northwest side, up on Prince Road, down to the southeast, over towards Davis-Montham Air Force Base, down to the southwest of the town on Irvington, all the way out to the Pasquayaki tribe. We have a site out there as well. So just pretty much anywhere you're at, there's going to be a El Rio site probably within a few miles of you.
You almost have grown to now, what, almost a 500,000 annual patient visits? Whoa.
Yeah, we're on track, probably hit about 500,000 patient visits this year. So very, very large, provide a lot of services to a lot of patients. And if you compare us size-wise to other, you know, health centers throughout the nation, we're about number 16 size-wise when you look at it. So one of the largest in the nation.
How about economic driver? We haven't talked about Sun Corridor, Inc. and your role with that.
Yeah, so we believe, you know, healthcare is a huge economic driver. When we're trying to recruit businesses to the community through Sun Corridor, a big thing that they always ask, they want to know about the schools, but they also want to know about what the healthcare environment's like, you know, what's available for our employees that they're bringing them in. So we do a lot of employer health. We work with Caterpillar, we work with TEP, a lot of the employers, and try to help them, you know, with their employee health needs in any way, shape, or form that we can on that. So that's a really big economic driver is healthcare.
And if you're looking for a job, you've got some.
We have a wide, wide range of open positions we're recruiting for right now. We currently have about 1,800 employees, you know, working today. We have over 200 active openings right now as well on our website. So, yeah, and to help fill those, we're going to start and have a job fair. Basically, you know, where you can come in, talk to people right away, get interviewed, and possibly even if it's appropriate, get a job offer right there at the job fair.
That'd be very nice. And that is coming up on Thursday, October the 27th. So that's 1 week from today, 2 to 6 in the afternoon over at Manning House downtown. So this is an excellent opportunity for someone that's looking for perhaps making a change and getting into healthcare.
Yeah, absolutely. Wide variety of openings. We're really looking for those frontline medical professionals, but there's still other wide variety of business openings as well. Depending on your skill set, there's probably something there for you. You can go to elrio.org/careers to look at the information and go and start the application process beforehand. Then show up on October 27th at between 2 and 6 and talk to the managers, do an in-person interview right there, and possibly even get a job offer.
I know you're, you are new heading up El Rio, and you set some goals for yourself, areas you'd like to grow the organization. Tell us quickly about that.
Yeah, so, you know, El Rio's had tremendous growth over the years, and that's just because of the patient needs that we're still out there, and we're still seeing a lot of unmet need in our communities. So we're going to continue to grow our services, medical, behavioral, dental, our three pillar services that we provide. So we're going to continue to grow those in our current locations, and right now we have no new plans to open new sites, but that in the near future could change as we identify new needs. But, you know, we need facilities, we need workforce, we need the staff to do that, to provide the services to the community.
The pandemic really changed healthcare forever, didn't it, in this country, Dr. Kuntz?
Oh, yeah, big time. We mentioned telehealth already. That was probably one of the biggest changes that came out of the pandemic. It was really hard before the pandemic to provide telehealth. And not that we couldn't do it. We could do it, but nobody would pay for it. And by that, I mean the government wouldn't pay for it. For Medicare, Medicaid, or VA, TRICARE, that those services would not pay for it, which means private insurers who follow that wouldn't pay for it either. So it was really difficult to provide those services when the pandemic hit. It's the fastest anything's ever changed in healthcare. We're a highly regulated environment, and things generally take years to change. We saw changes within weeks in the rules so quickly. We were able to quickly make that pivot and provide the services to our patients and help keep them safe during the pandemic at that time and keep our staff as safe as we could as well.
Okay, before we let you go, what about your, for more information about, you know, El Rio, what would be a good way to get that through the website?
Yeah, the website has lots and lots of information about us and our current services, how to sign up as a patient, how to look at our careers, our history. Just lots of great information on there. And that can be found at elrio.org.
Okay, and people can find out more about Sun Corridor, and I hope they'll visit the Sun Corridor website, which is suncorridorinc.com. Dr. Clint Kuntz, thank you very much. Good catching up with you. We spoke with you in 2019. I'm really happy the way things are progressing for your career, and I think El Rio has definitely made the right choice putting you at the helm. Thank you very much, Dr. Kuntz.
Well, thank you, Bill. I appreciate it.
All right, that'll do it for the Buckmaster Show. Our Thursday edition tomorrow, tomorrow, the Friday Focus interview, the sheriff will be here. We'll be talking with Sheriff Nanos, and my buddy Tim Steller from the Star will join me. Hope everybody has a great afternoon.